leading us in singing and doing a good job, and that's some of my favorite songs and brings back some good memories of days gone by. Both of those, The Holy Ground, I grew up singing that and sung that on several mission trips. Seemed like that's a mission song, and then that last song took me back to Rones Creek. And one Sunday, we had, Rones Creek was a small church in Tennessee, and one church, or one Sunday there was, for whatever reason, I forget, some event, there was a lot of people gone, including all the song leaders, which meant I had to lead singing. And do you remember that, Amanda? It was probably before Amanda came along, because she probably would have held me back in the chair. But anyways, I remember I led that song, and it went fine, and that was one of our favorite songs there at Rones Creek. You know, when you got to lead singing at a country church like that, and you're not very good at it, pick out the songs they know well and just get them started and let them go. And hopefully it doesn't stop. We had a few songs like that. They just get so slow at some point, you're just thinking, let's wave the white flag and end this thing. Precious Memories are like that. Oh, man. That's not my favorite song, Precious Memories. I don't mean to offend you, but is it Michael Tittle's? Well, the reason is because it is kind of a, you know, sad song a little bit. We had sang that song at Rones Creek, and it seemed like that song would never end. We could not finish it. Well, turn back in your Bibles to Genesis 37. We're going to be looking at Joseph, and we started looking at him last week and did an overview of his life and providence, and then we're going to think about chapter 37 tonight. What a rainy, messy, cold weather we have. I went out this afternoon to take care of the animals and do them, and what a day, unexpectedly, to have a baby calf born. Shivering and cold out there, and it was doing fine, and put the mama and the calf in the barn, and they're doing well, and so that was kind of exciting, little girl calf, and which is fitting. I didn't need an introduction for my lesson, and so I talk about the calf, and parenting is hard. Think about this little calf coming into the world like this, and the mom out there trying to take care of it. We're going to talk about Jacob and some of his parenting failures. And then I put the calf in the barn with the mama, and all the other calves were outside, and all the other cows were outside wanting to come in the barn, which also gets us to our point of our lesson. Jacob's favoritism, showing favoritism to one son, to one part of his family over the others. And so when we think about this lesson, certainly we can relate it to the difficulty that we have in our world today, and you think about the difficulty of a cow being born in this kind of weather, and certainly it could be worse, but you think about the difficulty it is of raising children in this kind of culture with all the storms that we have going on in our culture and all the problems we have going on. You think about the future of our nation, the future of our culture and the morals of our culture. It's a lot of challenges. And so it's amazing how practical and how applicable these lessons from Joseph are way back to the beginning of time and some of the challenges that parents were facing then, some of the parent challenges that we see the patriarchal family facing that we still face some 6,000 or so years later. And so we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about parental failures, and then we'll talk about sibling jealousy, of course, in the second part of the chapter where Joseph is going to be killed, hated. He's not going to be killed. He's going to be sold into slavery. He's going to be hated so much by his brothers that they start to kill him, but then decide to sell him into slavery. So we're talking about privilege, the favoritism. We're talking about the prejudice or the hatred of his brothers. Notice there's three parental failures I want to draw your attention to. And I must say that I wanted to start with that idea that parenting is hard because it seems a little bit, maybe, if I was Jacob, sometimes you need to think about that as a preacher. But what would Jacob, if he was sitting here, think about this sermon? And I guess I want to say that I don't want it to come across, anytime we study a Bible character like David, Jacob, Joseph, any of these Bible characters, we need to keep in mind that we don't know the entire story. There certainly could be things that we don't know. And certainly we're looking from years in the past, looking back, years in the future, back on their lives. And so it may seem that we're a little often overly critical of these characters. Certainly Jacob, had a lot of failures. But he also is going to be Israel, and he's also going to be the father that God chose to be the start of the nation of Israel and to have the 12 sons. And so Jacob also did a lot of things right, and he also did a lot of things that are commendable. And God is the God of the living, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Jesus says. So while I'm going to say some critical things about Jacob, I also want to begin by giving kind of a little caveat there to say that we also understand Jacob did a lot of good, and he's certainly someone who was a man of faith and a man that has many parts of his life that needs to be emulated as well. But there were some parts related to this section here that I think we can see his failure. And I want to note three aspects of his failure. First of all, Jacob had a history of deceit, anger, and jealousy. His name means deceiver. And if you think about his life, and we won't cover it all, but if you remember when he was a young man, he participates with his mother. Of course, he had gotten the birthright from Esau when Esau sold him the birthright in a rash decision by Esau. But then at the end of Isaac's life, when Isaac was poor in eyesight, he cooks that stew up and he goes in and serves that to him to receive the blessing. And this blessing was very significant in that culture and in this time. And he goes in and he lies to his father Isaac. He even puts fake hair on his arm so that Isaac will rub his arm. And he gives him this stew that his mother, Rebekah, had cooked up to help deceive his father. You think about deception, that's bad. Deceiving your father on what is essentially his deathbed at his aged time in life and lying about who you are to your father, claiming to be the older son Esau. That's Jacob. And then, of course, you think about how that led to a lot of problems with Esau and the jealousy and bitterness and hatred that went on between him and Esau. And then you have him going away and meeting with his father-in-law, soon-to-be father-in-law Laban, and agreeing to work 7 years for Rachel, whom he loved because she was beautiful and he had fallen in love with Rachel. But of course, what happens? He receives, on that wedding night, Leah. So Laban deceives Jacob, and then he has to work 7 more years for Leah or for Rachel. In other words, he ends up working 14 years for both of these ladies. And as a part of that, if you go back and read that, there becomes this division in between Laban and Jacob and about the livestock, and Jacob's going to do a lot of things so that he increases his wealth while Laban's wealth declines. And that's all a part of Jacob's kind of personality. And then you remember when they leave Laban, Rachel steals some of the idols. And then her father comes in and looks for the idols, but Rachel lies to him about the idols, the family idols that had been stolen. And then in chapter 34, soon before we get to our story, there was the rape of his daughter, Dinah. Dinah was one of the daughters of Jacob, the daughter of Leah, and she is raped by the men of Shechem. And the other sons of Israel go, and they're through a series of events, and I won't get it all into that, but bottom line is, they go and they are going to kill all the males of Shechem in retribution of them doing this deed to their sister Dinah. And Jacob is upset about that, but he's not upset at his sons for doing it, but he's upset that he says, you're going to cause us, verse 30 of chapter 34, to be a stink to the inhabitants of the land. So Jacob's just upset that they've kind of ruined their reputation in the land. And then in chapter 35, his dearly beloved Rachel dies in delivering Benjamin. And then that's a tragedy here that goes on. And then in chapter 35, verse 22, and this is difficult things, but his oldest son, Reuben, in verse 22, will improperly have a relationship with Jacob's, one of his concubines, Leah's handmaid, Bilhah. So he goes in, what is essentially to his, the oldest son goes in essentially to Jacob's wife, one of his wives. And so that caused a lot of problems, obviously. Here's an application from that before we go on. There's the very fact that our tendency is to be like our parents. Obviously, everybody knew that. And we all say that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But it's true that when you think about what happens in chapter 37, in every book I looked at and looked at a few books on the study of Joseph, they all give you a lot of history before they tell you chapter 37. Because you really can't understand chapter 37 and what goes on between Jacob and Joseph and why he is his favorite son and why the brothers hate him and why Jacob doesn't do anything about this hatred between the brothers, unless you understand that Jacob hasn't really done anything about anything thus far, and that's the way the family works. It works a lot like deception and lying to one another and jealousy and anger between one another. I had a conversation recently with someone not from Seven Oaks, I'll mention, so don't start trying to figure out who this was here. But they were talking, and they said that they've spent their entire adult life trying to make every decision not to be like their parents. And they mentioned that the reason was their parents had some very significant problems, alcoholism, and wasn't a part of, faith, didn't have faith in Christ, and numerous things like that, and had just a lot of issues and a lot of dysfunction in the family growing up. And he said, I realized that not every family was like that, and I've spent my adult life trying to make my family not like that. And then he said this, then I realized that there's a lot of things that I'm doing right now that are just like the faults my parents had. And he said that no, even though I've tried to avoid so much of this and intentionally tried to make every decision not, I still find myself doing some of these same things that I've abhorred. And I've got to work to try to overcome that. I think it's second nature, isn't it? When years back, talking about Tennessee when we were back there years back, but when we were first married, Amanda and I volunteered with what's called Carl Perkins Child Abuse Prevention Center. And we had to go through a lengthy training. And we went through that training, and then we were able to be what was equivalent of being back about like a big brother, big sister to two children who were in abusive situations. And we would meet with them every so often and just take them to do things. But the whole point of that training, the training probably lasted 6 hours, 10 hours, I'm not sure. But they could have summarized that training really quickly by saying that abusive parents don't want to be abusive, but they were abused as children, and they, when they're in stressful situations, resort back to that, and pretty much that cycle continues. Abused children abuse their children, and that cycle continues. And the point of that Child Abuse Prevention Center was to try to interrupt or break this cycle, to work with parents, to work with children, to break that cycle that just continues. And that's our tendency. We have to intentionally choose to break the family cycle. And in the story of Joseph, we see that much of the things that Joseph is dealing with is through things that have come from the upstream river. And also, they're going to be leaving things. They're going to be going downstream later on that's going to influence the future generations of Israel. And you and I are like that in our families. We are influenced by things that are flowing down from years past, and we're also leaving things in the river, good and bad, that's going to influence the future generations. So what are you adding to your family river, if you will? And what parts do you want to learn from the past, and what parts do you want to avoid from the past? The second lesson we should say about Jacob as a father is that he was a passive father. I went through our history there. Jacob is shown to be a passive father in these situations. He tended to resort to treachery and deceit. Instead of just dealing with things, he tended to try to go around it. Like instead of just dealing with Isaac, his father, and in order to get the blessing, he tries to deceive Isaac. Instead of dealing with the men of Shechem and the rape of Dinah, he just allows his sons to go and bring about this retribution, and then he does not do anything about his sons doing such a bad deed. Regarding the rape of Bilhah, or the relationship with Bilhah, he is also, in chapter 35, 22, doesn't do anything about that. And then here in chapter 37, verse number 2, Jacob or Joseph brings a bad report. And there's no indication that he does anything about that. And so he did not get involved in the problems. And he stayed away. Maybe it was because his family was so large, he felt like he could not deal with it, and so he stayed out of it. But I think the lesson there, application for us, as we think about being parents today, is parents must act and be involved with their children. Of course, it's important that as a young child, that as when you have young children, that you're involved, that the father and mother are both involved, and that you're consistent in your discipline, and that's something that's hard to do, but you're consistent in your discipline. But this point with Jacob is really throughout their life, that if there's something that needs to be addressed, you're willing to address it. When he had these crucial things happen, which are very revolting to us, like these incestual relationships and immoral relationships and these murders and all these things going on, Jacob somehow, it seemed, just stayed away from it. And he didn't get involved. And it's going to cause him problems. Now, Charles Swindoll, in his book on Joseph, said, "When parents are passive, they may eventually discipline. But by then, the delayed reaction is often carried out in anger. Passivity waits and waits until finally, when it can wait no longer, it comes down with both feet. When that happens, children are not disciplined, but they are brutalized. Passivity not only blinds us to the here and now, but it makes us inconsistent. Passivity is inaction when some action is needed. Jacob should have been more involved. It harmed the brothers by not giving them appropriate boundaries and by him not getting involved. The challenge for us is to want to be involved and be present." The third lesson we see from Jacob is that Jacob's had, and this is probably the most famous one, of course, he showed favoritism to Joseph. He showed favoritism to Joseph. Now, in verses 3 through 4, let's read our text now. So, Israel loved Joseph. Text just says it plainly. He loved Joseph more than the others of his sons. Now, once again, this is family history. Where have you read that before? Jacob loved which one, Rachel or Leah more? Rachel. Now, this is just following on down. Why does he love Joseph more? Who is Joseph's mother? Rachel. Remember, Rachel could not have children for many years. She finally was able to have a child after all the other handmaids and Leah had children. Rachel finally has one. It's Joseph. And then about a year before this, scholars estimate, she had Benjamin. And then, of course, she dies in the having of Benjamin. In the labor process of Benjamin, she dies. And so think about that. You have the wife he really loved. Of course, this is a whole other discussion about polygamy and why polygamy is wrong, because it always causes these problems. But the wife he loved, who is now deceased, it's obvious that Joseph and Benjamin are going to be his favorite. But it says he loved them more. He loved Joseph more than the other of his sons. Because he was the son, it says he was the son of his old age. It's also the case that many times as we get older, we contend, and we have children, we contend to be more of a grandfatherly figure than a father figure. And Jacob had a lot of children. He'd had a lot of kids. He's probably kind of worn out with all the raising of kids. And then he finally had Joseph, and he loved him as a son of his old age. "And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that the father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him." The robe is significant. The coat symbolized royalty. Scholars talk about how this coat, and it being in that day and age, it's not like where you go to Walmart and you can get all these pre-made fabrics. It was something that had to be ornately done. It was very wealthy and expensive. And it symbolized royalty. It also, it was a type of coat they talk about as well, that was a robe of many colors. That is, it was not a short sleeve tunic that you would use to work in that would provide some warmth, but rather it was a long robe that was a symbol of royalty. In other words, this is a coat saying, "You're my favorite son, you don't have to really work. Let all the other boys do the chores. You got the special robe." It also symbolized favor and position. It was an exalted position, and it was symbolizing that idea. And so the coat is very symbolic. The application of this, we don't have a lot of time to go into this, but favoritism can still be prevalent today and can cause harm today. Reading an article from Psychology Today, which is not based on Christian principles per se, but they talk about that in many American families, they estimate a third to two-thirds, favoritism is still a problem. It says parents might spend more time with or feel closer to same-gender children over opposite gender. Of course, in many mixed families where you have stepchildren and biological children, that causes a problem because oftentimes the stepchildren do not feel like they are loved as much as the biological children, and that causes conflict with the parents and conflict with the children and that idea of favoritism on that. You also have, it talks about levels of age and the birth order. Many times the firstborn might be feeling like they're the favorite, or many times it's the last one who is the favorite, and the ones in the middle feel like they get left out because they never have a time when they have all the parents' attention. A child's personality and behavior can also affect how parents treat them, which is very true, right? Parents may behave more affectionately toward the child who is a pleasant and affectionate child who doesn't require a lot of discipline. James Dobson talks about this in some of his discipline staff. You have the what is called, you know, some kids are just more obedient kids, and some kids are just more defiant kids. And as a parent, it's certainly easier to give more attention, to feel more comfortable, and to want to spend more time with the one who's easier than the one who is more defiant. Unfortunately, the consequences of parental favoritisms are what we might expect. Mostly bad. Disfavored children experience worse outcomes across the board. More depression, greater aggressiveness, lower self-esteem, poor academic performance. And then, of course, this continues on into adulthood, where oftentimes this causes problems in adulthood and conflict and things. The last line here, it says, parents who explain or that there's often going to be the case that there might need to be, because of situations, favoritism shown. In other words, it illustrates like this. When you have a newborn baby and you have older children, who's going to get the most attention and time? The newborn baby is. But in our culture, we simply explain that to the children. Hey, mom and dad are going to have to spend a lot of time with this child, but we love you still the same even though we're spending time with this one because he can't do anything for himself yet. This authors make the point that we explain that when it involves simple things like that, but lots of times later on in life, we should explain the reason why we may be making some of the decisions we're making. When we think about favoritism, and as I thought about that, there's a couple thoughts that I wanted to share further. And that is, it seems that favoritism is a problem when it goes against cultural norms. Because I thought about this in the Bible. Who got the blessings? The firstborn, right? And even in traditional culture, in many ancient cultures, and even in like the Amish culture today, it's the firstborn. But that often doesn't cause a lot of problems because it's what is expected. The problem is when it breaks cultural norms to treat one child above the other. It is impossible. All right, children, teenagers, y'all listen to me on this. I've learned something in 13 years, 14 years of parenting. It is impossible to treat every child the same. Can I get any amens out there? That was a little loud from Austin. But it is impossible to treat every child the same. And I think we often put that pressure on parents. You got to treat every child the same. The problem is, I've got four kids, and none of them are the same. That's the thing. Now, here's the thing from Joseph that I want to lift that really hit me. That is, every child, it is impossible to treat every child the same, but it is not impossible to love every child the same. The problem came when Jacob loved Joseph more than he did the other brothers. And what love means is that you try to do what is best for the individual child. You try to do what is best for the individual child. That may mean that you do things at certain times that are going to be may appear to others or to the other children as favoritism. But you try to explain that, and you try to be as fair as possible. But as a parent, you try to do what is best for the individual child. And so when you have multiple children, even at home, you're going to struggle with activities and the younger children and how you balance all that. And so you have to keep in mind that every child is not going to be the same, treated the same, but you love each of them the same. Another thought I would say is that parents, especially as you have children that are older, need to be conscious of monetary expressions. That is, the coat of many colors became a symbol of the Father's love. Like it or not, money often says love. And we know that that's not, shouldn't be the case, and maybe isn't the case, but it's often perceived as the case. That is, that if a parent gives X amount of dollars to one child, but they don't give X amount of dollars to the other child, it often is a problem there. And so the coat became a problem. And if you notice later on, when the brothers are going to take him, they first take off, verse 23, they first strip him of his robe. They hated that coat because it was an expression of the Father's love. And finally, kids need to understand that parents are trying to love each child appropriately and communicate and try to have as much open discussion as possible. And so parents, we need to do everything we can to try to avoid favoritism. And children need to try to not create favoritism, understanding the heart of a parent is to try to love each child and love them the best possible, and to try to have open communication from the child and parents when that's necessary. Well, we could say a lot more about that, but we need to move on and move on quickly. Let's talk about sibling jealousy. Sibling jealousy, because verses 2 through 4 talks about the jealousy that arises between them. So look at verse 2. When Joseph was a boy, he was 17 years old at this time, and he gave a bad report of his brothers. And then we find out, verse 4, that when his brothers saw that the father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. This hatred, this jealousy, went on for 17 years. And it got to the point where they were not even able to talk to one another. The application there would be, don't let problems and bitterness fester. And so for years this had gone on, and it seems that even after Jacob, Joseph has these dreams where he dreams that they're going to bow down to him. Verse 5, we realize that he told it to his brothers, and they hated him, notice the expression, even more. That is, he had a full plate of hatred already, but they piled more, like some of you going through the buffet line. They piled more on top of that plate. They hated him, but they hated him even more after these dreams. And so you find that in verse number 8 as well. So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Verse 5, verse 8. And then you see the same idea in verse 11. His brothers were jealous of him, and his father kept the saying in mind. So this stuff had gone on so that they weren't talking. The father should have gotten involved, should have known something about this. But instead, he sends Joseph to go check on them. And of course, that leads to the problem. I would like to refer you to Matthew chapter 5. Hebrews chapter 12 talks about bitterness and not allowing bitterness to take root, which interestingly enough uses Esau. But in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says this in verse 25 and 26. Come turn to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. There's a real significance to the idea that the longer things go, and in this case, it went on for years, it caused a greater mountain to try to be overcome. And Jesus said, come to terms quickly so that you will not be turned over to the judge, you'll not be accused, and you won't be spending time in prison. The next thing we see is that Joseph is going to gloat over his dreams in verses 5 through 11. It seems to me, once again, reading back 6,000 years or so into history here, but it seems to me Joseph deserves some blame here. We want to get all over the brothers, but also Joseph did not handle these dreams right. It seems like he is the typical, in the movies, he's the typical guy in high school that has the sweater vest on and the sweater tied around his thing and driving the sports car and got the girl by his side and all the people want to be like him. He seems like he's kind of that guy that's saying, I'm the man, look at me, I'm the man, and let me tell you something, I had two dreams and you guys are going to be bowing down to me. And look at my coat of many colors. By the way, this coat means I'm not working. Why don't you guys go check on the sheep and look after things? Joseph, it seems, is gloating over these things and is not having maybe the best attitude. And you might expect that from a 17-year-old boy. The application from that would be humility when in a prominent position can go a long way at helping others not be jealous. There's a lot of application to that one. I think a lot of the things that go on in our culture today, in the political realm, in the business world, in leadership positions, could learn from this lesson. That is, it's one thing to have a position, but it's another thing to be arrogant about that position. Humility, when in a prominent position, can go a long ways in helping others not to be jealous. I do believe that we have a responsibility not to be a stumbling block to others. We have a responsibility ourselves to be humble and kind. Think about modesty. If a woman wears immodest clothing, as some in our culture do, and they say, well, it's not my fault, it's the man's fault for looking. Now, we understand that, yes, it is wrong, as Jesus teaches, for that man to be looking and lusting after her. But we also realize that it is also wrong for her to be dressed in such an immodest way and to be displaying such immodesty. Let's apply that same lesson of modesty to our attitude and to our actions. It is also wrong if we are arrogant and we are displaying everything in about our position and we're boasting about our material blessings and our blessings that we have in a boastful, gloating way, then it could be the case that, yes, others may be wrong, just like the man is wrong in lusting after the woman. Others may be wrong, but it also could be the case that we are wrong as well for having such an attitude and wearing such immodesty in our attitude. And so we need to think about how we can be modest in all things, from our social media postings to the way we handle our blessings, our material possessions, to the way we use money, to the way we talk to others, the way we handle others. Let's be humble. And especially if you're in a leadership position, and if you're in a position where you have power over other people, the more humility you can display, then the less jealous people will be of you in that position. And finally, we note that hatred turns to murder. Now, I understand, I've read the story, I understand they don't really murder him. But in the idea of the Sermon on the Mount, of what Jesus is teaching in Matthew chapter 5, and the idea that anger and saying that whoever murders someone, whoever is angry to the point that's equivalent to murder, and we understand that they were going to murder him, and then Reuben talked him out of that, and they had these Midianite traders come by and they sold him. So it's equivalent to murder. And that's very typical of what the Bible speaks of. The brothers had had enough. Jacob was passive and poor in wisdom to send Joseph. And so they stripped him, verse 23, of his clothes, of his robe. They threw him in a pit. Reuben, they were later going to come back, one of them was, and rescue him. But these Midianite traders came along, and they sold him for 20 shekels of silver. Charles Swindle says that 20 shekels of silver is the equivalent at that day and age, not sure how he knew this, but I guess through history discoveries, of a handicapped slave. So they didn't even get top quality out of him. But they sold him, got some money, and then, of course, they soaked that coat in a goat's blood that they had slaughtered, take it back to their father. What's the family? How do you handle things in the family? You lie. You deceive the father. Isaac was deceived by Jacob. Now Jacob is deceived by his sons. And they lie and say he had been murdered by a wild animal. I want you to focus on verse number 25 in our last point. They sat down to eat. They threw him in a pit, verse 34. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. They threw him in a pit. They had it all taken care of. They were now going to decide what they do with him. And they sat down to eat. Don't be comfortable with sin. I heard a story one time about people years back who were on the job. Their job was to go around to the farms and get the dead animals, get the dead livestock. That's a pretty terrible job. But they would go around and think about it in the summer, flies everywhere and all the, you know, the decaying carcasses. And their job was to go around, lift up, get these cows, pigs, things like that, put them on a wagon, and then take that wagon away and dispose of that dead animal so it didn't infiltrate the other animals. And they got paid for doing that. And there was a picture, there was a picture of them, and they were sitting on some decaying carcasses eating their lunch. Think about that. Why could they be so comfortable that they could sit down and eat lunch in the midst of all the flies, in the midst of all the filth and the stench, and be comfortable enough to eat lunch? It's because they did it every day. They lived with death and filth every day. They became comfortable with it. The brothers had lived for 17 years hating him. They had hated him even more. So when it came time to do the deed, they could sit down and eat lunch and not really worry about it because they had become comfortable with their hatred. In Matthew chapter 5, 21 through 22, Jesus talks about this same idea about murder that I was referring to. And he says, "I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says you fool will be liable to the hell of fire." They had become so comfortable with sin. They had such a low view of Joseph by looking at him, as Jesus talks about, a fool, that they were equivalently doing murder to him. A lot of great lessons that we could draw from Joseph and Jacob. Thinking about these sibling jealousy and the problems that exist there and the problems that exist in families with jealousy. Thinking about problems that exist with favoritism and the problems there are in parenting and raising children. Many of the same things that they dealt with, we still have to face and deal with today. If you have a need this evening to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you want to rededicate your life, we invite you to please come as together we stand and as we sing.